podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Don't Nearly View system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
With the Planet Fitness Black Card, you don't just get a great workout, you get a great perk out because your membership is packed with perks. Join for just $1 down and $24.99 a month.
Join the judgment-free zone today. Deal ends Thursday, August 10th.
See Home Club for details.
It is the Anfield Wrap. Neil Atkinson with Phil Blundell, Rob Gutman and John Gibbons. John, we're back in the studio. The first time we've been back in months, and you can tell because it's just took me about four times to attempt manage to record this show.
I mean, I don't even know if we are recording this, to be honest with you, anymore. But I'll give it my best either way, do you know what I mean? I won't leave anything on the pitch. But like, yeah, who knows?
It's like parallel universes, isn't it? It's somewhere the show's been recorded.
Somehow, somewhere the show is being recorded.
It's absolutely glorious if he goes to Rob in a minute and Rob, I can't think what he's going to say.
Yeah. Three times. Going to go to Rob in a minute.
That's a great question, Neil. I haven't thought about that.
It's Phil Blundell, it's Rob Gutman, it is John Gibbons, it's Neil Atkinson, and we're all doing our best. We're distanced, everything's been hosed down, wiped down, and we want to try and get back to doing the Anfield Wrap in the studio if we can, for as long as we can. There'll be a few other shows getting done in the studio, and obviously still a lot of stuff being done remotely. We're taking a bit of a hybrid approach. If you haven't subscribed, there's loads of fantastic stuff on the Anfield Wrap at the minute, and that will obviously continue to grow. Lots of fantastic work done around the transfers last week, so do that, theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. But anyway, we'll get to Lincoln City, we'll even get to Manchester City versus Wolves, but we'll start Chelsea 0 Liverpool 2, and it was a hell of a performance from the Reds, Rob, in what is Liverpool's biggest league game for at least 7 months. I'm coming to you with a question right now, and we're going to do it, Rob, we're going to get there.
Feeling good about
how impressed were you with the mighty boys in red?
Really impressed. Did we get that? Yeah. Good. Yeah, well, I'm on to word seven now. Feels like we're making progress. Okay, this is a behind-the-scenes joke here that's not going to work really very well for people listening to this. So I'll start again. Right, how impressed was I? Well, when we recorded the Friday night preview show, now, let's cast your mind back. You came to me and said, are you nervy about this? And I said, I'm surprisingly bullish about it. I had a really good intuitive vibe that we were going to do the business. The minutes before kickoff, that all dissipated and I was shitting myself. But you know, within minutes of the game starting, you could see how the pattern was set. I mean, okay, Chelsea had a couple of breakouts in the early phases. But for me, it was so 80s Liverpool. And I mean, it was like a sort of strange deja vu for me. It took me back to a place where I used to sit watching this team that was just so strong that it would just impose itself on the opposition routinely. You know, we've been used to seeing a game where Liverpool could be on top, the opposition could be on top. You don't, especially in the big games, you don't know how it's going to play out really beforehand. But this just felt very much like, this is the champions. This is what it means to be the champions, actually. Part of the celebration is because the champions gain this, have this aura about them. I think Jamie Carragher on the commentary that we were all watching yesterday was saying, Liverpool are playing really well here. He said in sort of in an ominous tone. I thought, yeah, he is. I was watching with Steve Graves and I said, the more attritional this is, the better it is for us, because we are just crushing them. We are grinding them down. We put them where they had to be for the entire game and got better and better and better. And the biggest red herring in that game, and I'll shut up in a minute, is that there was a sending off to make it seem like it was another game. We would have won that any which way.
Yep, the sending off accelerates rather than changes the game. I'd agree with that, John. The focus, I thought, from Liverpool was just off the charts. The playing like champions thing, as Rob cited it there, is major. But Liverpool, to me, from the first whistle, really, there's a wonderful passage of play where Liverpool, with the slightly makeshift back line with the addition of Fabinho, just keep a Chelsea player offside. Everyone's running backwards, but they just keep him offside because they're talking, they're so switched on, they're so smart. But that just personified the brilliant focus of this Liverpool side.
Yeah, it was a very grown-up performance, wasn't it? I just loved the way they dominated from minute one. We just decided it was our ball and Chelsea were going to have to do the best to get it off us. And you know, it was, they looked so confident. He could sense a confidence with them even when they were walking from that mad trailer thing that they have to get dressed in. Do you know what I mean? They were sort of, you know, Chelsea were all out and eager, and we were just taking our time. Oh, we'll get there. We'll beat us in a minute. Don't worry. And they sort of just sort of strolled over, all having a little chat, and then just as I say, dominated the football, dominated the game. And the only thing you were thinking is, oh, you know, they're not sort of quite creating, you know, enough maybe. But I think we were just trying to create those good chances where it was relaxed. We weren't sort of, you know, panicking. You know, I saw a lot of people saying, oh, you know, shoot from anywhere, test this keeper. You know, there was none of that sort of thing. They were like, well, you know, we'll get there when we get there. And that little flurry at the start of the second half just won the game for us. And even when they got the pen, I wasn't too worried because I thought, oh, you know, if he scores, which he normally does, it'll jolt us into action and we'll just go and get a third. So just brilliant watching them, great seeing sort of how good they are. And it's a reminder really, isn't it? Because, you know, we've had the sort of the closed season thing, and even before that, you know, it was all a bit sort of funny, wasn't it? And then Leeds was a bit mad. This was a reminder to everyone, both Liverpool fans and everyone else, just how brilliant this Liverpool side is, the team to beat this year by a distance.
The Chelsea are third last season, Phil. They're not a great third, let's not go mad, but they finished third. They've invested the money they've invested over the course of the summer, and yes, that comes with a little bit of a question mark around bedding in. My point is that you can allow for Manchester City away. You can allow for the difficulties we've had and the idea of rivalries against Manchester United and Everton. But I would argue that at worst, that's possibly our fourth toughest game of the season. It's our fourth toughest away game of the season at worst. And Liverpool made it look like a stroll.
Yeah, we kept asking Chelsea a lot of questions and they had absolutely no answers. It's the point that they're answers were to just get deeper and deeper and deeper. And the most damning thing was when they had the ball at the back and they put it out for a throw in 3 yards from the corner flag because they just couldn't get out. Like, not even, oh, we've tried to ping a ball to the left back and it's gone out for a throw in over his head. And that happened as well. But it was 3 yards. It was literally 3 yards from the corner flag. I've never seen a team with less ideas of how to beat a press than that. The centre backs, it's not within that. I don't think Zouma and Christensen are capable of that. I'm not really sure Jorginho is. Kante definitely isn't. Mm. And then the one player they have who is Kovacic. They just didn't seem to get on the ball enough for me.
Did you think we were trying to block the angle too?
We probably did. I think we probably knew that there's the thing where they set traps for people, but they're also going to obviously do the complete opposite of setting traps, which is prevent things from happening. And that's what we did to Kovacic, shut him down, because he's very good at getting the ball and driving 15 yards and getting up the pitch. And they just couldn't get out. And it was almost a surprise that the red card came from an incident where the ball was basically in our final third.
Mm.
Because you were almost surprised that they were able to get that far up the pitch, particularly the fact that Mane was basically through one-on-one with the keeper 40 yards from goal. That bore no resemblance to anything that happened in that first half as a whole.
It's one where I think, Rob, in the end, everyone gets what they came for. The only blip's the Henderson injury, which, if it is just a tightness within the muscle, maybe we're back in contention for Arsenal. Maybe just in general needed a bit more rest, having been perhaps accelerated back for the start of the campaign. But everybody, and he plays his part obviously in the game, not least with the magnificent ball for the one. But everybody gets what they came for. The goalkeeper gets his big save that he could possibly have done with a little bit more than maybe we were all letting on. And obviously there's the Alcantara debut.
Yeah, the story's everywhere, isn't it? I mean, Fabinho was my standout, and then I remembered Sadio Mane had actually scored two goals and been fantastic. But everywhere you look, I mean, quietly, another majestic Salah display. Just all over the pitch. You're being harsh if you go, well, I didn't really notice Trent as much as sometimes do, or Andy Robbo maybe. But yeah, they were just... I think the main anxiety, the reason the focus for me, and I think a lot of people, was on the Fabinho performance, was because of the surprise news in the before kickoff that we'd lost two centre halves. Something we speculated on all summer long. Fabinho's fourth choice centre back, he could always do a job there. We've seen glimpses, but you go, fucking hell, I didn't mean it to be tested at Chelsea away. You know,
I think Fulham at home.
When you see in the early exchanges, Timo Werner's playing his side and is confident and ready to prove something to everyone. And in fact, skins Fabinho the first touch he has on the ball. You go, oh, fucking hell. But from that moment onwards, Fabinho had him. Fabinho was winning. It wasn't just his his positional sense, do you know what I mean, and his calmness, which are things you attribute to him. It was the way he won his one-on-ones that was, I thought, was particularly impressive. He looked like a natural centre-half, not like a midfielder doing a job there well. He looked like a natural centre-half. And during the course of the game, I suddenly went, he's our second-best centre-half, isn't he? We suspected he might be, but he actually is. I mean, obviously, he's got to do it over more than one game, but that's a hell of a tester, that one, for him, I thought.
It's on Fabinho at centre-half, Phil. It's a terrific performance, it really is. It will be a terrific performance. You'd be pairing if Joe Gomez put it in. And I think Joe Gomez is tremendous. I think Joe Gomez is not just the second-best centre-half at the club, but the second-best centre-half at the country. Mm. Fabinho puts that in, though. And given the nature of how many of the games we will play this season, may well end up looking, even if sides have got 11 on the pitch, not dissimilar to the way the second half of that one looks. You can actually begin to make a bit of a tactical argument, not the idea of using him in extremis, but a bit of a tactical argument about possibly using him there a bit more than we would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing he was doing yesterday, and he was winning the ball. He was very aggressive in what he did, and he was stepping out and winning the ball, as opposed to not necessarily being on the back foot and letting someone come on to you. But he was almost playing like he was still playing in defensive midfield.
Mm.
And he was winning the ball that little bit higher up, that just gets them turned around a little bit. And I don't think he had anything to do with winning the ball for the red card, for example. But if you win the ball a little bit higher up, it causes them a lot more difficulties. And it's something different. It's something for them to think about. And I also wonder if the Chelsea had planned all week for something.
Yeah.
And then find out an hour before kickoff that actually one of the centre mids that you plan for all week is playing in defence.
I think that's a fair point in terms of his defending as well. Yeah. I think they haven't got any time to have a think about Fabinho playing centre-half. I think if he had a run there, a few clubs might think, try and take advantage of the fact that he isn't a natural defender. I don't know what that is, you know what I mean? But, you know, can we sort of play on him a bit? Can we, you know, what's he like against the Chris Wood or something, for example? So I think it's a little bit early to say, oh, he's just a centre-half now, do you know what I mean? I think he benefits from the fact that, you know, you talk about the planning there, that the Chelsea aren't thinking all week, well, for being a centre-half, how can we sort of take advantage of that? It's just sort of throwing on them. But I thought, you know, aside, that's looking into the future, you know, looking at Sunday, he was excellent. And like Rob says, you know, if it wasn't for the Manny brace, he probably is man of the match.
I think there's something, Phil, in what I like about this game is both sides are 4-3-3 on paper. It all gets written down, and it all gets written down as 4-3-3. You can even say Chelsea have got a bit of a false nine, Liverpool have got a bit of a false nine. Wide players who want to cut in. Attacking fullbacks, Alonso and Reece James aren't shy about coming forward attacking fullbacks. But the approaches to the game couldn't have been more varied. Chelsea are completely reactive and Liverpool are completely proactive. And I think that tells you a lot about, firstly, how Chelsea view Liverpool at the moment.
You say there was 4-3-3 written down. I still have no idea who was playing pretty much where. Like, was Werner playing left or was he playing up front? I genuinely still don't know. I don't know who was playing on the right for them. They were a bit of a mess. It's almost like Lampard has heard people talking about the fact that he can't set a team up defensively and they make too many mistakes at the back. And he's just gone, what we're going to do is we're just going to be quite compact. We're going to play with no width. We're going to stack the middle of the field up and we're going to try and frustrate someone. And to be fair, we didn't really have a chance in the fit until the red card, if we're being honest. But most of that was by us being happy to be patient and happy to get to half time and happy to sort of just feel them out a little bit and frustrate them. But you do wonder how they were going to do anything than draw 0-0 yesterday when you look at what it was. How are they getting the extra 10-15 yards up the pitch?
Well, every Chelsea chance, John, every time they tried to move into it and grow into it, it ended up with the ball back at the feet of the centre-halves, with the exception of the one that Werner decides to hit from 22, 23 yards out, and it just flashes wide. The keeper's got it covered. Everything they tried to do in that first 45, it just ended up back with the ball at Kurt Zouma's feet, and he's about to get pressed again.
Yeah, it was strange, wasn't it? There was a couple of times you're like, oh, they've opened this up a bit here. They had like a 3-on-3 or something, and then it just disappeared, and I don't know how we managed it, really. It was just like sheer will or lack of sort of ingenuity from a Chelsea point of view. They just seemed to hesitate, and then that split second, and then suddenly they were surrounded again. Liverpool were just great on and off the ball, really, and they just sort of dominated Chelsea, really. They bullied them a bit, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, everything that they did. And as I say, I was so calm watching it. I was just so relaxed because, you know, like Rob, I had the sort of jitters just before kickoff. You know, I don't want to drop points here because we won there last year and things like that. And And then as soon as you're just watching them and they're just so in control, you know, it's just like this zen, isn't it? You're like, oh yeah, the brilliance, don't worry about it. It's like a big hug.
Yeah, I'd listened to Lampard's after-match thing, and you can see he was very focused on the defensive side of it. He was almost taking quite a lot of comfort from the fact that we hadn't absolutely made 20 chances against them. They were awful, I thought, against Brighton quietly. And they were opened up time and time again by that Brighton team. So he must have come out of it going, oh my God, what will Liverpool do to us, right? If we're anything like that. So his first job, as Phil said, was to be compact. But use compact as a base to spring from. Teams that have done well against Liverpool lately, Arsenal have done well against us, City, in that game where they turned us 4-0 after the lockdown. Those sides have all sat back against us a bit, absorbed us and been able to spring. But as Phil said, they were forced ever deeper. And Liverpool were ready. Liverpool are now experienced enough and mature enough to know that's how teams are going to play against us. It was apparent at the beginning of last season, by the way. Do you remember the Arsenal game where we win 3-1 early on? But Arsenal went, they sat in, they were getting out a little bit of joy with Pepe on the break, but Liverpool were kept control, kept focused, kept concentrated, and were able... I actually think there were quite a lot of parallels between that particular game and this one, although this one was a tougher game because I think Chelsea were probably better than Arsenal were then, but still, we made them not look so.
They're sending off Rob. The run, the ball, and then Christensen. You do think that Liverpool... And I think there's part of Liverpool's patience in the first half, which is, and it isn't just the goalkeeper, but it is worth mentioning the goalkeeper. These will make a mistake. You'll just got to wait. They'll give you one. You just got to wait. They'll give you one. And I think that was there. And it actually ends up being the sending off where that's in part the case. I don't know what Christensen's thinking in the grand scheme of things. And it was also a very good example of video assisted refereeing being used correctly.
Yeah, and it's one of the rare times that Chelsea actually have the courage to get their defence up the pitch a bit. The first time they've got a line, they've got a right, we've got a platform here, we might be able to start to play for the first time in the entire game. But, you know, it's just ruthless. The ball is a fantastic ball. The decision to give her the yellow card, I think I'm going to be harsh on the very harsh on the review. It was borderline, it's a cowardly, non-committal decision because it's either a bit of an accident and a coming together, or he's the last man and he's done it deliberately. I don't see where the middle ground, where you award a yellow card, was even an option for the referee. I think he was sort of abrogating responsibility to the VAR after he'd been told.
I think I'll just come back to you on this, Rob. I think there's a couple of things. I think one is it's difficult when you see the referee's angle for him to tell the distance between Mane, the ball, and the goalkeeper.
Sure.
So he's got that. But I think the other thing that is in his mind, and it's worth saying that it was Big Mick Oliver who was in Stockley Park, and Oliver and Tierney worked together all the time. So I almost wonder if this was a little bit of Tierney by committee, knowing Mick will bail me out here. If I've made a mistake, Mick will bail me out. He's a good fella. He's one of the Northeast's finest.
Yeah.
And I think there's a bit of that from that. I actually think it's an example of the referee, almost a holding position. Because someone will have a chat and then I'll go and look. And it's when he sees the screen, he's very quick. Yeah, he just runs it through once and he goes, that's where everyone was. Sound.
I think the linesman was actually worse than the referee because the linesman doesn't. I don't think there's any way that the referee from where he is can absolutely 100% know that Mane is going to beat Kepa to the ball.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't know that, he can't send him off. Even though it's a stupid challenge and whatever, it's still probably just. If Kepa's going to get that ball, it's probably a yellow card. I mean, the mad thing is that if he doesn't foul Mane, I think Kepa probably gets sent off for fouling Mane.
I agree.
So I think someone was getting sent off out of that attack.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? Happened. Yeah.
Because Kepa's only going to foul him there.
Yeah.
At the ball.
And he's too close to him to pull back.
And he's not just going to let him run around him because you don't do that, do you? So I don't know how someone wasn't getting sent off. But I can sort of sympathise with the referee because mainly I think the linesman was far worse because the linesman's looking straight at it from the side, knowing exactly who was getting to that ball first.
But it's also, John, I think it's just sort of the system. I take Rob's point, and trust me, on the Hot Michael live commentary, I was absolutely, I very much had a view. But I do wonder if this is an example of, you know, for instance, if Dale from Dale Johnson from ESPN was here, he may well say, you know what, this is it actually all working properly. That's what it's all meant to be. The referee gets into a position to have a consultation remotely. Then he goes and has a little look. He calms everyone down as well. That's the other thing as well. You know, Henderson's over to him like a shot, considering the fact that Jordan was injured. He was quick there. I think that's it all working.
Maybe we all just sort of need to get sort of used to it a little bit more. But I mean, I'm with Robin that it was quite a shock to see him pull out the yellow. You're like, are you serious? You might as well have pulled out a purple card. I was that staggered by the chain of events. Like, what is
a
he
Christmas
doing?
Christmas card.
Yeah, exactly. It was that. I was like, what on earth? And then he even makes a mess of sending him off, doesn't he? Gets the yellow. Oh, no, that's I got it. Sort of thing. Like, he's a, you know, so it was.
Gets his visa out. He's a, yeah.
John Lewis loyalty card.
Yeah, and it was sort of strange, but. You know, I mean, yeah, as you say, maybe we need to sort of get used to it, and maybe referees just will do that thing of, look, I'll do this and it'll just buy me a bit of time, and if it's a mistake, then Sam.
I can go and have a look.
Yeah, but he ends up looking a little bit silly. But I like the fact that they're having a look now. I think that's a sort of better thing than rather just sort of getting something in the ear, because at least he feels sort of a bit more kind of, you know, part of it in control.
I think that's part of what helps him put himself in a position where he at least knows, I'll get to reverse the decision.
Yeah.
I'll get to look. And that's what I mean when I wonder if it's the system working. He's almost put himself in a position where he'll get to have a look at it on the telly. And then the onus is where the onus is. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Did he look at it on the telly?
Yeah.
You see, Phil and I were talking about that phenomenon beforehand. When they go to look at it on the telly, they get to re-own the decision.
Yes.
This is the problem. I know we're going to talk about it, but the penalty that's given against it, if he goes to look at that on the telly, I think he probably reverses the decision and goes, because I think it's an incredibly soft penalty, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a penalty, but I don't think you can overturn it, because I think there's probably, he will go, well, he touches him. So it's not like a howler, which is
It's not clear and obvious.
He can overturn his own decision, though.
Yeah, but the reasons for overturning it, because you think you've got it dramatically wrong.
But that's a mad rule if you think about it. It's not a fact because of the first intuitive reaction, and therefore it's a bigger deal to reverse.
It is mad to a point, but then again, you can't just... The referees have to have some form of authority. You can't just go, well, you did this now. Go and check everything.
It does beg a whole conversation about the threshold for penalties, right. I think, and contact and degree of touch, which is just seems so arbitrary to my mind.
If he hadn't have given it, I don't think he would have given it. It's basically the...
Yeah, no, I'm sort of all right with that, but also we're not far away from my argument that they need to reshape the penalty area. which is actually my position on this. The penalty area should be a semicircle, which comes to a point 18 yards outside from the goal, and it should be a pure semicircle. So therefore, then, stuff that happens innocuously in the corners of the penalty area where there's not actually that much risk doesn't lead with a lead there to be a massive opportunity. But, you know, they're not going to start redrawing the penalty area just because I say so on a podcast.
No.
You never know.
Yeah. Well, campaign starts here.
If you don't try.
Well, that's a fair point, Phil. You know, so we've all got enough on, haven't we? The second half, Rob, I think Liverpool would have come out the second half not too dissimilar, I don't think, had they have been 11 versus 11. They'd have had the half-time chart. You're going to do this, you're going to do this. The opening goal's a peach, but I think we were going to get this from Liverpool regardless. The only thing that might have been different would have been that Chelsea might have been able to have a bit more of an outball or a bit more threat.
Yeah, exactly. They were so deep in the course of that first half that it really didn't make much difference to them. I mean, they went from the hint of a bit of attacking threat to none attacking threat. So you almost can't... Yeah, you can always find a rationale for it, but it felt like one of those goals that isn't a consequence of a team being a man light by any stretch. It is the goal Liverpool probably would have scored with 11 versus 11. The intensity Liverpool would have come out with, the game plan felt like that was the goal we were working towards. And quietly, maybe I'm just basking in the sort of happiness of post coital 2-0 wins over Chelsea or whatever. But that was quietly one of my favourite Liverpool goals of all time. I just think as a simple team move by key attacking players, it's almost perfection. It's coaching manual stuff. And the finish by Mane is ridiculously good. Although it's coming across and you go, he could score from this header. When you see what he actually has to do to score from that header, he's quietly, I mean, Lewandowski notwithstanding, he's quietly one of the best central strikers when he wants to be in the game, Sadio Mane. He's like a gymnast in terms of his physique, which not a lot of footballers are. He's incredible.
It is an incredible goal, John. By that point as well, Alcantara's completely enjoying himself. I mean, it is verging on the perfect debut, and he plays a small part in what is an absolute peach of an opener.
Everyone's great in that opener, isn't he? Like, Mo Salah's quietly brilliant in it, but he's not going to get it. Well, he's getting some now. He's right now. But you know what I mean? But, like, you know, he does something really good, but because two or three other lads do something slightly better, you just sort of forget about it. But like Rob says, it's almost a training ground goal, and it's the kind of thing that they were trying to do for the first half, and by trying it, it makes me sound like a negative. They were working towards, and that's where I always sort of, you felt that they were relaxed about the fact that we hadn't been peppering the goal with loads of shots and things like that, because we're like, we're just going to do this eventually. We're just getting to the bit where the opportunity comes, and obviously with 10, it's a little bit easier. You've got a little bit more space, but you mentioned Thiago's part of it, and you know, I was impressed by how part of everything he was sort of straight away, really. And I think you only really get that from the highest quality of player who can just come in. You know, he must have trained once with them. You know, he's on the bench thinking, oh, I might get 10 minutes at the end, you know, if it's going well, you know, if the manager sort of fancies, you know, being nice, really. And suddenly he's thrown in at half time at 0-0, and he's just boom straight there. And you know, everyone obviously thinks he's great because they kept giving him the ball, and he was just enjoying himself. And I think there's obviously loads more to come from him. Do you know what I mean? I don't think that's a, you know, it's not a statement performance in terms of what he did, but it is a statement performance in the fact that he's able to come in straight away, completely cold, and do that. It shows how much there is to come from him, and how much all these players are going to enjoy playing with him, and how much we're all going to enjoy watching him.
It's, to me, Phil, it's a positive double-edged sword, the Alcantara thing, where I think he comes in, he's just come from the European champions, and he's not having to adapt to play with Liverpool. Liverpool are ready for him. And that and everyone's, you know, and the aim with this, and I mean this genuinely in the sense of he's come from the European champions, the aim is that this raises everybody. It raises him and it raises Liverpool, that both things happen. And I think he got to see a little bit of, that's the promising part of that second half performance, is that Liverpool were absolutely ready for him to come and do what he did.
He's just a phenomenal footballer, isn't he? I can't remember where I saw it, but someone said he makes the simple things look fun. Never mind, like there was one ball he played to Wijnaldum, it didn't quite come off, but there was no one in the world who was expecting him to pass to Wijnaldum, probably including Wijnaldum, to be fair. But he's just great to watch, isn't he? I mean, his vision, his range, his ability to just move the ball quickly, and the ability to move the ball quickly is probably the most important thing, because it's one thing the midfield hasn't been great. If there's any criticism you can make of this team, it's probably that the midfield isn't incisive and quick over short 10-yard passes. It's all get the ball to the fullbacks, and it also now means that it possibly gives the fullbacks a little bit more room, which is quite a scary proposition on the basis of how many goals and chances our fullbacks create. Because there was a lot of teams last season who were going, right, we need to shut these fullbacks down, and obviously they failed, but now they're going to try and do it, and if they try and do it, then there's one of the best passes of the ball in the world in the middle of the park.
Yeah, I liked his vertical passing, which we haven't seen in our midfield. There's a few times he just tucked a little one in behind. We thought, that's not on, and he did it. Everything he did in a measured haste. It was even like the little five-yard sideways balls or a little knockback was done quick. Like, come on, let's get this going. You know, people often talk about metronome players, and I often think you're creating a story around the player who's just an average midfielder at times. But that was genuinely a metronome performance. But it's sort of interspersed with those moments of quality, like the little vertical semi-reverse passes, like the looking for the man making the run at the far post. That's what I want to see, those Coutinho-like little chips to the back post, which the only one of our midfielder who's really done that historically has been Jordan, but Jordan needs a certain angle to do it from. He's got that kind of, I'm not a golfer, is it, the sand wedge to the back post kind of curving ball.
I'm not a golfer.
Whatever it is. But it's a certain type of ball Jordan can play, but I think for it to really come off, the conditions sort of have to be right for him, whereas I think Thiago's got a bit more of the Coutinho in him, that he can see a greater range of passes than the rest of our midfield.
There was something else about it, John, as well, which felt to me like he'd watched the tapes. And I know that sounds really basic, but like, he's watched Liverpool play a lot. I got the impression from it, like, oh, I can see how all this works. And it genuinely just seemed as though it was, yep, you'll be there. Again, with the fullback. So he likes it. I was really pleased there was a couple he actually overhit for Trent. Because that's a good thing, because in his head, I've seen Liverpool play, you're normally on the road for them. And it really looked to me like it was, I've seen the tapes of how this works.
Yeah, it's a good point, Neil. I haven't really thought about that, you know, that maybe, well, we've spent months watching YouTubes of him, he's been doing the same the other way around, is quite sort of nice. But, you know, it just shows, if he has, that, you know, that level of of dedication and professionalism. And I've, you mentioned the stuff we've been doing over the weekend around this transfer, and I've loved doing it. You know, I couldn't get enough Germans on the phone to talk about Thiago. Half of them I didn't even record. I was just like, this is, I just want to chat about Thiago with you, mate. It might be a podcast, it might not. Just because, like, because they all just love him so much, and they all just, you know, talk about not just what he is as a player, but also his professionalism, his standards, his qualities as a sort of a human being. And you know, and we obviously haven't seen all of that yet in just sort of 45 minutes, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he has been, you know, really focused on, okay, I'm going to, you know, his pre-season's been preparation, you know, but you know, on a computer, you know, because he hasn't been able to be with us yet. And, you know, if he has, then great. And I just think he's going to just be such an asset for this team in every possible way.
More passes than Everton made in the whole of last season, I think. That's one of the stats. I might be slightly wrong, but something like that.
He's on the verge of coming out and saying that on a Twitter interview himself. Liverpool's so aggressive at 1-0, Phil. So aggressive. Their keeper's crap for the second, and I think it's fair to say that. The flip side is, as you said before, they had centre-halves kicking it out for a throw first half. They're still trying to play there, and he, to be fair to the keeper, even after it goes 2-0, he actually finds a couple of decent passes out from the back. This is... I always feel at times when we do this, we end up slaughtering goalkeepers for managers' instructions, because I'm sure more than anything in the world, he just wants to kick it dead far down the pitch. But you're not allowed to. You're meant to keep playing. Listen, as I say, he's really, really poor for it, but Mane's there to make hay.
With 10 men, you sort of don't understand why Tammy Abraham wasn't on the pitch, and there was more of a, we'll just give the ball to him and he can try and hold it up.
Just
and
do channels.
And we can get 10, 15 yards up the pitch. We can have a bit of a rest. Maybe it'll go out for a throw-in and we'll get the throw-in and we can have a minute of just not chasing after these footballers or trying to get out of our own penalty box. And there's a lot of naivety from Lampard as a general, as a manager, and I think, and I don't think he was particularly good yesterday, but Liverpool never stopped. We just got right in the face, and that second goal is just an example of, if you get something slightly wrong against this Liverpool team, you're in trouble, because he's only... like, I don't even think the pass to Jorginho is that bad, because it's not along the ground either. If it had been along the ground and he intercepts it, then you can go, well, you probably need to put a bit of height on that. But he actually does put a little bit of height on it, which quite often you see passes that goalkeepers and centre-backs make and they just go over someone and you're like, oh, that was annoying. And on another day, that would go over Mane's leg to Jorginho, and Jorginho turns and he's away, and it's bad, but he's a little bit unlucky as well, I think.
I saw someone say, I can't remember where it was, but that, you know, if Mane does that to a defender, you're saying, oh, it's brilliant pressing, he's forced the error, and so we need to sort of have the dialogue around that as much as anything, really. Like, obviously it's a mistake, but it's a mistake that's forced by brilliant forward play and by anticipation, by, you know, just commitment to it as well. But as you say, Phil, it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't a gift. Do you know what I mean? He makes that happen, and if he does that to, I was going to say Christensen, he'd be off the pitch, he'd have a job. But one of their other defenders, then you'd be saying, you know, oh, fair play. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's that great closing down, it's great pressing, it's got a great commitment. So we probably should, you know, have sort of similar dialogue around this.
In that respect, it's a little bit similar to the penalty, in the way that if Alisson dives and he slides the penalty and everyone goes, oh, brilliant penalty, he's put this at the keeper down. And it's not a great penalty, really, because he basically can't score that penalty if the keeper stands still. Because of that skip he does, he can't generate the power to put the ball in the bottom corner. So as soon as Alisson chooses to stand up,
If we're talking about the penalty, I mean, it's been a bugbear, I think, for a few people that Alisson's penalty record, saving record, hasn't been good in any of the shootouts, has it? Alisson's, I have felt until yesterday, has been plagued by what a lot of modern keepers are plagued by, which is the focus on putting off the keeper. So there's a lot of jumping around going on, which means that they're often on the wrong foot by the time the penalty's taken, because they're coming down from the bounce, so they're going up on the bounce. The person who started all the putting off thing is Bruce Grobbelaar in 1984, but Bruce crucially does wobbly legs. His feet are planted, right? He's not jumping up and down like an idiot doing starfish jumps. Alisson's first time I've seen him stay absolutely still and focus, like, as a keeper, simply saving a shot. And who knew he could do it well? I want to ask everyone a question here, though. Just going back to the Kepa error. How do you compare that to the Karius error in Kiev? Because surely you were talking about it during the game, because we were. Do you think it's as bad?
Not
as bad?
Not as bad.
Okay, why? Why is it not as bad? Because I'm not sure in my own mind.
Karius has got the ball in his
Karius hand. Yeah, he bowls it. Karius isn't under pressure.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
Well, he's got the ball in his hand, so he's not under any pressure.
Oh, he can't see the man. So well, yeah.
He's got the ball in his hand. Yeah, you can't pressure a goalkeeper with the ball in his hands.
True. True. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. That's got it right for me.
I'll carry on, Neil.
Another mystery solved.
Got things we're getting done. We've changed the shape of the penalty area.
It's a credit where it's due. I don't know why when I watched it.
Got the ball in hands.
It is poor from the keeper. Obviously, it is. There's something else as well, John. We talk about the absolute retreat of Chelsea. It is worth remembering that last time we went down to 10 for any length of time in a big match. City did demolish us 5-0. It is a thing that happens because everyone is now so focused on shape and the way in which, you know, Liverpool are superior to Chelsea. We've demonstrated it often enough recently for that superiority to be doubled down on by a side that will just move you and move you. I think it is, you know, we do have to sort of bear that in mind to a degree.
Yeah, but I think all the praises for Liverpool and all the praises for Liverpool and what they do to other teams, and I think, you know, I got sort of sick of the fans are saying, oh, you know, oh, we didn't turn up against you, or we weren't very good and stuff like that. And I just think that's what we do to other teams. You know what I mean? You can't all up and down the country be saying, oh yeah, we were just rubbish, we didn't turn up that day, or we weren't very good. You know what I mean? It's not a coincidence that we make other teams look ordinary because of how we suffocate them, because of how we dominate them, and because we just take all the kind of, you know, like optimism from them. Like, they probably went into that game thinking, you know, we might get something today, we won last week, you know, we caused them problems at that mad game in Anfield, if we just do it, they'll have the manager's words in their ear. And I think after about 5 minutes in, they probably thought, no, we're going to get beat here, these are well better than us. And that's what we saw, and that, you know, taking that out of a football team is something that we do really, really well. And Chelsea today, I don't know whether they thought they were in a title challenge, but now they just sort of know they're not, and that's mad because it's two games, and you know, City haven't even bloody played yet. But you know, it's one of those where they'll know right now that it's a Champions League spot for us again, because we're just not on their level, and that's it. It's an amazing thing that they can do that.
Next little thing then is obviously the penalty save. I said before, the keeper sort of needed it, Phil. I think he just sort of needed to have a big contribution in a football match, to be quite honest with you, because he has been a little rocky, a little bit not himself recently. And straight away, I think you got to see it on his face, to be quite honest with you. It was one of those where it was actually good to have the television, because I think you got to see that he was just delighted and his teammates were delighted for him.
It was nice to see him make a save, being semi-serious, because Leeds had three shots last week, goal. It felt like the majority of shots were going in the back end of last season, and obviously it's a time that doesn't really matter, but it's still not what you want to see. You want to see your goalkeeper protecting a clean sheet and helping you out and enabling you to win a game 1-0, basically, because that's what goalkeepers are there for, really. Help you on an off day. And he's brilliant, isn't he? Let's be perfectly honest. But I sort of said before that he got in Jorginho's head as soon as he didn't move, because that penalty cannot go in if the goalkeeper doesn't move the way he does that stupid skip. The only way that the keeper stands up and you've done that skip is if you absolutely blam it in the bottom corner. And when he's done that skip, he just can't generate the power to do it. So as soon as he stands up, you're quite likely to save it, I think, and it's very clever from him, and they've clearly done the planning. I remember Harry Kane missed a penalty and Karius saved it, and he went straight down the middle, and Karius basically just stood up and punched it out. And it shows that they're actually thinking about how you do this thing and planning, and it shows that the level of preparation that goes into this football team is probably unparalleled anywhere else, I think.
That's a really fair point. And in that vein, John, I think the choice of Milner was also interesting. And the choice of Milner quite early, I felt, in the match as well. 63 minutes, Milner on. Keita also went off early in the first game against Leeds. There's a couple of little things in this. I do wonder if, in part, they're just trying to still ease Naby Keita in. The one thing they don't want is for him to get another injury, so they're trying to limit his minutes where they can. But in general, I just thought that they had a really clear plan for what they wanted from James Milner when he came on, and he provided it.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised to see Milner, because he doesn't do him the week before, does he? And does Curtis Jones, and people made it sort of a bit of a thing about that, really. But obviously decided that this was the game for Milner, and I guess it is proved right, because, you know, he does well when he comes on, and Liverpool obviously sort of see it out. I think it'll be interesting to see how he uses his midfielders generally between now and the end of the season, because he's got a lot of them. So whether it's, you know, whether it's, you know, using people in different positions like he did with Fabinho, whether it's, you know, just heavily rotating because of the number of games, or whether he goes a bit sort of, you know, horses for courses, you know, in certain situations, it's going to be really interesting. You know, I think for Milner, it will be sort of in and out. I can't see him ever really getting a run of games now. You know, I'd be really surprised if, you know, by, you know, at the end of the season, we're saying, oh, remember when James Milner started 4 or 5 on the bounce and he was brilliant. I just sort of can't see it really, unless, you know, something mad happens injury-wise. But I think, you know, he's shown at the weekend that the manager still feels that there is a time and a place for him. He'll always be on the bench because of his versatility. So even when we're completely at full strength, he'll always sort of be in the squad because of the positions he can play. But also, you know, how you are able to use him. And, you know, I called it a grown-up performance right at the start, and he's sort of the ultimate grown-up, isn't he? Sort of knocking around. But it's great, and I'm pleased for him that he's sort of been involved, because, as I say, the week before, when Curtis Jones gets the nod ahead of him, you're like, oh, hang on, you know what? You know what sort of is going on, but obviously he just thought that game was right for Curtis, and this one was right for Milner.
I wasn't surprised by the substitution. I thought it was definitely the one he was going to make, because Klopp often makes his a lot of his in-game management is very by the book, and by that means he had a 2-0 lead, and the priority is therefore not to concede. He knew that as a solid fact. That was the main aim for that team over the final 25 or 30 minutes. So what do you do if that's your priority? Too early to put on a third centre-half, and you didn't have one, so it's not going to be that. So what you have to do is put on a defensive midfielder and take off a more attacking one. Keita was the most attacking of the midfielders. It had to be him who had to make the change, even regardless of the fact that I subscribe to the view that you've got to ease him in a bit. But I think regardless, you take out the attacking midfielder and you put your most defensive midfielder on the pitch, and that was James Milner. So I would say, with the simple logic that I think Klopp uses, that was the only substitution he would do first in that situation.
I thought the interesting thing about that substitution wasn't actually anything to do with Milner. It was that Wijnaldum ended up being the Wijnaldum that plays for Holland.
Yes.
He's
more advanced than you think first half as well, when you look at the data.
He was a long way up the pitch. And as I mentioned before, there was a ball that Thiago tried to play over the top to him. He has a shot, which is, I think it's just inside the penalty box, and he puts it straight at Kepa. But it wasn't the kind of thing you associate with Gini Wijnaldum, sort of, the Liverpool Gini Wijnaldum anyway, breaking into the penalty box, having a shot, being in a position where you can, like a forwards goal, for example.
We should score last minute.
Yeah.
Should get the rebound last minute, should get a tap.
Yes, you should. Yeah. And that's not where you would have thought.
No.
That's not what you associate with Wijnaldum. That would have put us top of the league temporarily, by the way. About that. That would have been...
To look on the bright side, John, other things, many excellent performances, but let's focus in on Mo Salah, but especially Sadio Mane. I mean, yet again, he turns up for Liverpool, he gets the lad sent off, first half, scores the goal to make it 1-0, cuts out and makes it 2-0. That's called being at the centre of things.
Yeah, we're really lucky to have the three of them, aren't we? And, you know, there's just... Did you strike fear in the opposition? And obviously it was Salah's week last week. He gets the hat trick, but he's exceptional. This week he's a little bit quieter, still sort of played well, but, you know, obviously it's Mane. He's always turned to shine, isn't it? And to have the two of them as assets, you know, they're both going to get 20 plus goals this season easy. You know, one of them might have a you know, real mad one like Salah did a couple of years ago, but, you know, the both of them there, and Firmino, you know, is playing well as well, without necessarily sort of weighing in with the same number of goals as the other two, but, you know, he's part of the action and part of the goals, and so it's just fantastic to have, and they are genuine forwards. You know, we talked about formations before. You know, it's put out there as a kind of a 4-3-3, isn't it, with nominal wide, but they've got absolute license to move and to very much be central when they need to. And Mane is, you know, has been performing at a ridiculously high level for quite a long time now, and you know, maybe doesn't quite get the attention everyone else, you know, either Salah does or Oro does do, but I think he's fine with that. Do you know what I mean? He knows how good he is. You know, his teammates know, his manager certainly knows, and, you know, he's, you know, if you think, you know, if the opposition aren't worrying about him for a second, then they need to be, and that's what he showed, because they probably thought they were getting to half time there and they'd done all right, and then suddenly he's got a man sent off.
I was thinking, if you get to in games where those three are getting within 10 yards of each other, consistently, you're in business.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the goal. They are all within, Salah and Firmino within 5 yards, Mane a bit further over. Once they get to that, then they're always working in a game to get to those positions, mm-hmm. I think. And once they can, they can get, do it. They can play the wall passes. They can surgically unpick a defence, and that's exactly what they do in that goal, in that moment.
It's been a big week, Phil. Victory over Leeds, the two signings. Jota's still to come to make his debut. Win at one of our toughest opponents. It is a week that sort of, I think, firstly re-announces Liverpool are playing competitive league football. We'll soon be playing competitive European football. But they're not just playing competitive league and competitive European football. They're lining up to try to win a double.
Yeah, I mean, quadruple. Let's have a go at that. Think big. Reach for the... What is it?
Don't want the quadruple, stage, Steve. Maybe. Don't want the quadruple, Phil. I'll just take the double.
Well, yeah, but you didn't want to, you just wanted the league instead of a quadruple.
And now we've got the league, haven't we, Phil? And look, I was right all along.
give him another couple of
he's
years.
Mad, absolutely mad. He's what's he trying to do, win it in stages?
The one thing about having the growing level of the squad is that actually it's rude not to try and win a domestic cup, quite frankly. And also it serves the purpose of getting games for players.
Well, that's why this one on Thursday is significant, in that there's a lot of players who could just do with getting a run out. It's like, I think I'm very committed to Liverpool winning on Thursday.
Mm.
Not least because there's a lot of footballers who could do with playing the following week as well and going from there. But before we do that, it is a massive week. We will see Jota make his debut against Lincoln City. But before then, City have to go to Molineux, Rob. That is an absolutely horrible first game. United got beat when they haven't had a ton of preparation. Gundogan is out due to testing positive for coronavirus while we've sat here. United have got beat against Crystal Palace, and by all accounts I didn't watch it, but I got to watch the sort of text updates, and they gave me the vibe that United was shite, so yeah, I'm sticking with that.
Shite is correct.
Okay, and we did Chelsea. My point here is that this league table could look really, really funky for Liverpool, from a Liverpool point of view, quite quickly.
Yeah, it's lovely that Chelsea and United have had any illusions shattered very, very... I mean, you know, this can all be a bit... prove ill-founded. I mean, Conte's season at Chelsea starts off with a terrible first four games and then puts together a 15-match winning run. But I don't think that's happening here to Frankie or Ollie's boys. I think it was important to have their wings clipped. United had a sense of momentum. I think if United had won their first two, they could have built a little bit from that because of the way they performed at the tail end of last season, notwithstanding the cups. So there was a beginning to be a sense that they were better than they were, I think. So it was important for that. Chelsea, obviously, with the signings, you don't want to see them fly. So it does set us up nicely. And the City one, of course, City could and are more than good enough to comfortably put Wolves to bed 3-0 tonight.
Phil disagrees with you, Rob.
They're good enough. You know they're good enough. I'm not saying it'll happen, and I'm going out to watch it. I'm quietly confident that Dharma's boys...
Hang on, say that again.
Do you think they're good enough to beat Wolves 3-0?
They are good enough. Whether it's something that they're capable of from the off in the first game of the season, I'm not quite sure. Like, we were talking about Chelsea being the third best team in the league. I can't see Wolves being an easy game for Manchester City today than Chelsea was for us yesterday. Just simply because Wolves they're a nightmare to play against.
Yeah.
But you've also got to remember that City were 2-0 up and fairly comfortable away at
absolutely
Wolves last season, and they had a red card, and then they lost 3-2 and it all unravelled from there.
They went 2-0 up with the red card.
Yes, they did. Yep. You're right. But then there was half an hour of it. They got one back and they were massively up against it. But
hi ho, Wolverhampton.
Yeah. It won't be easy for them, I think. But if they won 2-0 and they were really good, you wouldn't be shocked. I think Aguero is a huge miss for them because the longer it goes on, I'm less convinced by Jesus. And I think he seems to get into a lot of goal scoring situations and then just struggles to convert them.
Laporte's out as well.
So. Although I think the myth that they only concede goals without Laporte was shattered at some point.
Yes, I mean that has been well and truly dealt with, that one.
I think that was a very convenient excuse for a long period of last season. Yeah. They might not have been quite as poor without him, but I think there's a lot of structural issues that they have that Laporte just doesn't suddenly fix.
It's a big, big game for them, quietly, this, because of the message
They've also got Leicester next weekend as well, City, and that's not... It's not a picnic, I don't think.
I think Guardiola's team talk is sort of done for him in terms of, boys, this is massive, you know. But that doesn't mean they're going to do it. It is a big game. There's pressure already on them. So, you know, let's see. Bring it.
Bring it indeed, says Rob Gutman. Absolutely wants to bring it. Linking away then. Let's just sort of tidy up on that one. A reason John Gibbons, Diego Jota, storms away from the Wolves squad is because he wants to play against Lincoln in the EFL Cup.
Storms away? What's this about?
He refused to be played in the EFL Cup last week.
Oh, didn't want to be cup-tied?
So I think he didn't want to be cup-tied.
Oh, right?
I could be wrong. I mean, I'm very
was
much...
was also on Thursday, though, wasn't it? And yeah. Signed
is cup-tied still a thing?
Yes, it is a thing. Just not in Europe. You excited about watching him and other footballers, John?
Really excited. Yeah, it's a bit of a shame we can't go,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I bet you've had some trip planned.
Lincoln. Oh, it'd be nice.
What a day we'd have had.
I bet there's some boozers in Lincoln. I've never been to Lincoln.
We'd have set off in 20 minutes.
You believe now we could be there for the City game?
Yeah. Yeah.
Your joke. Hey, I tell you what, the first of my virtual aways might be order of the day, yeah.
Lincoln, yeah, it's nice. I've been to Lincoln. It's right up your street, Rob. Just slightly further than you want it to be.
Yeah.
But
difficult,
you know,
drive,
isn't
it?
Stop me.
It's not a nice drive, really. But, you know, once you're there. But we're not going to get to go.
What are the many things Lincoln and Australia have got in common?
What's it like? Is it like Chester, but with actual pubs you want to go to?
It's hillier than Chester, I would say. Maybe a bit more compact, but that's a good thing, I would say.
Absolutely.
Chester's a bit more spread out than you want it to be, really.
I know.
You kind of forget. You're like, I'm in a small place. Why is this so far away? Why am I still walking?
Am I on the ring road again?
Yeah. Why have you put the station there?
Where are the pubs? No pubs. No actual pubs.
No, it's Lincoln's good, but we're not going. But we are. But the Reds are. We're not. Can we go?
We can't go.
Okay, you've talked me into it.
Diego Jota. Yeah, hopefully he plays. There's a few we want to get games for, isn't there? I'd be interested to see who he goes for at centre half if there's sort of issues there and things like that, whether he go strong to sort of ensure we go through or he gives some of the younger lads a go. Obviously there's Cometio and as a sort of an option. You know, you want to see Curtis Jones, you want to see Minamino, obviously you want to see Jota. It'd be interesting
Jimmy
to see
Cass.
It'd be interesting if he Harvey. Goes Yeah, it'd be interesting who he goes for up front. Whether it is the start, is there a start for Origi? Is there a start for Brewster? I think those two are interesting ones in that where he sees them playing his football. I think if Brewster's not getting his start here, then you know it's suggesting that we will be looking to get him, you know, somewhere else at least on loan, and for Origi as well. You know, if he can't get in this team, then he's sort of had it really, hasn't he? So I think up front are the interesting ones. I think much of the rest team sort of picks itself because, you know, there's lads who you want to see get games. It's only really the centre half injuries that are a bit of a pain, but I don't know how serious they are. So someone like a Joel Matip could play.
Yeah, I want to see Harvey Elliott because I think there's growing excitement about him at the club. He quietly gave us, well, actually not quietly, he gave us quite a glimpse of his of how he's progressing against Blackpool in that pre-season game, scored his goal, was doing a lot of bits. I think he's almost the first name on the team sheet in a certain sense for them. They want to see him and they want to see how he can do. I think we're going to see him one side, Jota the other side. I agree, it's difficult to call the centre forward.
It's Minamino,
isn't it? Minamino's got to play, you're right. He has to play. And I'd say the people he feels he's going to have to give games to because he owes them it are Curtis Jones, yeah. Minamino.
Chimikas,
he owes games.
Milner.
Yeah.
Milner captains this side. I think, yes. I wouldn't surprise me if this team did indeed fulfil Phil Blundell's very limited ambitions. Milner would captain this team in the final, I suspect. He'll go all the way through with them.
Yeah. Klopp will be working backwards from his Arsenal selection, I think, because those who won't start that, he's going to think, I need to give them a start. Now, there's an interesting question around centre-half, because I'm not saying it's likely, it's possible he saw enough from Fabinho to go, I really wouldn't mind giving this one more go against Arsenal. And Gomez has a small injury.
A slight injury, wasn't
so does he say to Gomez, you can have 50, 60 just to keep you in rhythm, maybe? Rather than, because his alternative is to put out Billy Cometio and Vandenberg.
The only thing about Cometio is I'm pretty sure Klopp mentioned before the match that he was injured.
Oh, right. Is Shaqiri
out, by the way? That's why he wasn't involved. I don't know about Shaqiri.
We can assume so. He always is.
Walks the beat of his own drum.
Yes. It'll be important for Nico Williams to try and get a game to, I mean, yeah. He did really well for Wales, but to rehabilitate himself in the Liverpool first team setup again. Midfield's difficult. I mean, most people go, oh, it won't be Thiago now, but I think it depends. Does he want to start Thiago against Arsenal? If he doesn't, then he's got to think about starting him against Lincoln. However incongruous that
seems. I think he'll have in his mind that if he doesn't fancy he's going to be able to start Henderson, then I think he will.
Yeah, I think if Henderson's, if Henderson, we forget, is still working his way back from an injury. So get the tight thigh is one of those sort of compensatory injuries you get when you're coming back. It seems to happen anyway. So it might be that he's already going, I don't want to risk Jordan breaking down, so I won't start Jordan against Arsenal. So therefore, Thiago would start against Arsenal. So therefore, you work backwards from that, really.
I also think it kind of feels like one of those games where you look at the team sheet and you're like, oh, hang on, Wijnaldum's playing again.
Mm.
Especially with the sort of paucity of, it sounds a bit mad, but not the lack of midfield options. But if you're going to make three changes, given that we started four of them yesterday, technically, there's not a lot of wijnle room. So it wouldn't shock me if it's Wijnaldum, Milner and
What's
Jones.
His midfield then and for then, Arsenal, if you had to pick it today?
Depends on what he does at centre. I think it literally depends on what he does at centre-back. If he plays Fabinho at centre-back, you're probably talking Thiago, Wijnaldum, Henderson. If he plays Gomez at centre-back, you're probably talking Henderson, Thiago, Fabinho.
Either way, you haven't picked Keita there, so he's a possible starter then.
That is
fair. I think the lad who's likely to miss out, there is one of them is likely to not, or has to not start sort effectively, because there's a key five now, isn't there? Mm. So one of them misses out. So he starts. I don't know who he is. Plus Milner.
I think every, but what you've all done is you've all done 4-3-3, because I think there's every chance he goes 4-2-3-1. Minamino behind either Brewster or Origi, Elliot off one flank, Diego Jota off the other.
Where's Curtis playing in the
Curtis
two?
Curtis plays in the two, yeah, which he did the other, which is where he ends up playing there in the game against Leeds.
I think the two, if he plays 4-2-3-1, I think the two is likely to be Milner and maybe it's Keita.
I think maybe Milner and Curtis. I think he'll want to give Curtis.
Oh, Curtis will play.
Those two
somehow.
Are definitely playing. Milner and Curtis Jones will 100% start.
Yeah. Okay. Feels like we got somewhere there. not actually written down.
More questions than answers.
But, you know, we got somewhere. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Rob Gutman, Phil Blundell, and John Gibbons today. If you do get the opportunity to subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, please give it some thought and come and join us for what should be a fantastic season. And the reason why is Liverpool are indeed absolutely top of the pops, absolutely flying, doing the business again. They were brilliant against Chelsea and they find themselves now being back to what they were, the most exciting team in the country, the best team in the country, the best Liverpool side you'll ever see. See you later.
At Pennzoil, we have one job. Pioneering a motor oil so advanced, you don't have to think about your motor oil. Instead, you can think about how your engine sounds, how your stomach feels as the RPMs build, how your wheels hug the curves, and how, with the Pennzoil Platinum up to 15-year, 500,000-mile protection guarantee, your adventures will be many. Pennzoil. Long may we drive. Find it at Firestone Complete Auto Care. Enrollment required. Keep your receipts. Other conditions apply. See pennzoil.com/warranty for full details.
At Eastern's Automotive Group, your job is your credit. Our job is to be honest. That's why we have a one-price promise. The price you see is the price you pay. No gimmicks. So you know you're getting a great deal. Visit easterns.com to find your perfect car.
Sports Social Podcast Network.